My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Can you dig it? Mike Edison here, Judy McGuire out on assignment, ghostbusting, getting ready for our big Halloween show, and guaranteed this is going to be the heaviest show in Heritage Radio history. And I'm holding the book right now, Louder Than Hell, The Definitive Oral History of Metal. And if anyone who says this is not the heaviest book of all time just doesn't know their math, because this thing weighs about 9 fucking pounds. And with us today, I'm very happy to welcome John Wiederhorn and Catherine Turman, authors of this unbelievable book.
Thank you. And it's only 2.5 pounds, by the way. But, you know,
but
you
if
can,
you
UPS can do some curls.
It, you're definitely going to drop some cash.
This is the kind of thing that Dostoevsky aspired to.
Well, it's our War and Peace. Right. It's our War and No Peace at all, actually.
I gotta say, that was one of the best musical intros we've done. That
yeah,
was awesome,
well,
man.
Can you dig it? Well, thank you. That's the new Arts and Seizure nice. Music. I'm missing the old Mike and Judy theme already, but I know. But maybe, Arts and Seizures.
Maybe we should get Metallica to do a new theme song for you.
We should,
well,
that'll
cost about like $500,000.
You think I get him for that? That's cheap.
That's true.
Hey, Heritage Radio is 501c. Hey,
we got connections.
Yeah.
They could write it off. Metallica, you saw them last night, Catherine, at the Apollo Theater?
Yeah, it was a private concert. It was for Sirius XM listeners, which I am not. Sorry, support the terrestrial and the online and the nonprofit radio myself. But what the heck? I wanted to see Metallica. And yeah, they did only 2 songs from Death Magnetic, you know, which is their newest. But they did, you know, Battery, Seek and Destroy, Hit the Lights. They started with that, For Whom the Bell Tolls. So they did the oldies.
Well, what is it about Metallica that seems they've, more than any other metal band of their generation anyway, have really transgressed? I mean, they're practically classic rock by now.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, actually. John, do you want to chime in? John, of course, did not make it to the show for various reasons, like he wasn't invited. But it was awesome.
Ouch.
Oh, I'm kidding, John.
Yeah, no review passes for those without reviews. yeah, no, Metallica are really a band that have transcended every element and every decade of metal evolution and kind of stuck to their guns. They've made little transformations along the way.
Haircuts,
but yeah, they flirted with alternative styles when that was in. But really, I think they've done whatever the hell they've wanted to do, and that's a key to their appeal. I think they've stuck to their guns. They said, "Well, screw it, we're going to do an album with Lou Reed." And we don't care if you don't like
good
it.
Oh, Lord, I forgot
and
about that.
It was,
they tried to also.
Most people thought it was awful. Most people think Saint Anger is an awful record. But, you know, it's an experimental record. It's a wild record, and it's what they were thinking at the time. So they've always followed their muse,
their muse,
I think people appreciate that.
And whatever their therapist tells them to do.
Well, plus they invented thrash metal, and they'll always, get credit for that.
And today they're at Yankee Stadium. They're probably right about now getting ready. Well, I guess they'll play if Mariano comes out for the ninth inning. I guess they won't play before the game.
Yeah, I'm not a ball gal,
but
so to
it's,
speak.
It's Mario Rivera Day at Yankee
last
Stadium.
Last night was his last...
Well, they're celebrating him today, I guess.
So is Enter Sandman his...
That's Enter Sandman's his walk-on music, and there's a ridiculous amount of heavy metal music in baseball, actually in sports. I mean, I always find it's such a slippery slope where, I mean, first punk rock, of course, was that unlistenable noise, and certainly thrash metal was even one step beyond, but now I turn on the game on Sunday, and they're using, like, Slayer on the bumpers.
Well, maybe wrestling also started using a lot of rock and metal, too. And
well, we talk a lot about professional wrestling on the show, and a lot of the techniques that professional wrestling, especially Vince McMahon and the WWE, had created are obviously being adopted and have been adopted by the Olympics and lots of other things. I mean, it was the WWE and that team that produced like the Rolling Stones pay-per-view. It goes way beyond that arena because their idea of how to put on a good TV show, and especially a pay-per-view event, has been adopted. But let's talk about heavy metal in the book, Louder, The Definitive Oral History of Metal. It's a fine line between hard rock and heavy metal. Let me stake my flag in the
All
ground.
All right, let's hear it because we may come to blows.
Okay, because I don't
not
know.
Not the good kind.
Bang your head, Catherine. I don't know how much of a metalhead I truly am, but I'll tell you what I love. I love AC/DC. I love Black Sabbath. I dig Deep Purple.
Not metal, metal, not metal. Carry on.
Okay, well, no, okay. That's not true. For their time, they were metal. When there was no metal, this is what was heavy, and this is what was, the most aggressive form of music, and that's what metal's always been about. I mean, I'd say Kiss, no, not metal. Van Halen, no, not metal.
But they're both in the book. I fucking hate Van Halen. That is a sound. Why? I can't even stomach the way they sound.
Even the first three records?
Jamie's
crying. Come on. Good.
Eruption.
Running
good
with the
Lord.
Devil.
Revolutionized.
I don't like that style.
Leads.
I love guitar playing. I don't like that style of guitar playing.
Okay, well, if you're a punk rocker, if you come from a punk rock scene, you're a DIY dude, then yeah, Van Halen may not be your cup of tea.
And what I prefer to call rock and roll.
Well, yeah.
You know, and the further it gets away from Chuck Berry, the less I'm probably going to be interested in it, especially if it was an electric guitar.
Well, you know what I will say? I think that must mean, I'm going to guess that you like Motorhead.
Well, I love Motorhead.
Okay, because, in doing the book.
Who doesn't love Motorhead? I don't like people probably who don't like Motorhead.
Someone's
actually,
grandmother.
Motorhead,
someone's
you
grandmother.
You could say Motorhead invented thrash metal.
But Lemmy would say no. We're a revved up blues guitar band, which is what he said. Garage band.
God,
yeah.
They covered a John Mayall song like on their first record.
Yeah.
To show you where he's coming from.
I mean, that was weird. In starting Louder Than Hell, I've never written a book. John had never written a book. So I ran around asking people, what is metal? And everyone had different answers or no answers. And Lemmy said, we're not metal. Even Sabbath said, we're not metal.
And you do, I mean, Kiss is right up there, and a band I've certainly enjoyed, hard rock band, right?
Yeah, but they're really important because although they were a hard rock band, every important metal band that followed grew up
Anthrax,
or even started a band
Yorkers.
Because of Kiss, Pantera.
But they're very
Dimebag
excited, and
Daryl.
Certainly painting your face, and using that kind of imagery in the pyrotechnics became a cliche for the genre.
Yeah, I mean, we chose to start the book kind of proto-metal. So we have Alice Cooper and the Stooges and, kind of the roots of metal, MC5.
MC5, right, Blue Cheer.
Right, all bands that I dig.
Yes.
Right, right. Well, that's where you have the fine line. It's like, okay, Black Sabbath, undefinably metal,
but also kind of a hippie blues band.
Indisputably, yes.
Indisputably. I said undefinably?
I knew
right,
what
okay.
you meant.
Yeah,
it's early, you're having beer, whatever.
Right. But yeah, Sabbath laid the blueprint for metal. And yeah, they were a hippie blues band. They started out as Earth, and
they've got a song called The Wizard, and there's harmonica.
They used to have a saxophone player. And Tony Iommi started out, or was for a short time, in Jethro Tull. But that notwithstanding, yeah, the sound that they conceived was absolutely metal, and every metal fan will agree that this is metal. But what came right before it? What influenced them? I mean, they were listening to Zeppelin like crazy. They're listening to Cream, and you could argue the Cream have elements of black metal.
Absolutely.
Hendrix,
absolutely.
What Hendrix was doing evolved into metal.
And then certainly, long, screeching, wonderful guitar solos. I mean, to me, Hendrix, though, he was a blues man. He was Muddy Waters on acid.
Yes.
But it was heavy.
Right.
But the drums weren't heavy. He had a jazz drummer, basically.
Right.
And that was like kind of a thing by the time you get, especially Led Zeppelin, who may or may not be a quote-unquote heavy metal band, but certainly that drummer is a heavy metal drummer.
Absolutely.
John Bonham. I mean, he swings like a fucking beast, but it is heavy.
And Jimmy Page can be a metal guitarist, and Robert Plant has all the elements of being a metal vocalist. That's a great thing about Sabbath is they were metal and so much more. So they had all the elements of metal, and then they did, 50 other things, and we're capable of folk rock, and we're capable of psychedelia, and we're capable of just being a rock and roll.
There's a certain legitimacy to acoustic guitars in heavy metal, too, which was always confounding.
Sure.
I'll tell you what really, here's why I don't like Van Halen, by the way. One reason is that fucking synthesizer and things like Panama and Jump.
Okay,
and
that wasn't until 1984. They were an established band before then.
All these like heavy metal kids, all these like hard rock and heavy metal kids accepted that. Why they didn't just flee Van Halen en masse and say, fucker sold me out.
You know what? That's when I lost
Why
Van Halen.
Did they accept that shit?
Because I kind of lost interest then, too.
Their first four or five albums were so monumental. When they did Van Halen 1 and 2, there was nothing like it. They were the blueprint for the L.A. sound. I mean, they preceded, like, Quiet Riot, right? I mean, they proceeded
in the same time frame ish. Yeah. So that would mean you don't like that chapter in our book where we talk about Eddie overdosing from drugs and the Starwood and all the legendary shenanigans there,
falling down on PCP in the bathroom.
I think, you know, with Van Halen, I mean, lots of bands, but Van Halen's up. Especially, there's such lack of self-awareness, I mean, which is going to lead us right into Spinal Tap. I mean, there's no sense of irony with these guys. You know, I mean, I get the idea that, you know, Van Halen went to see Spinal Tap, you know, and Eddie Van Halen's probably like, why are they making fun of me?
he's the Nigel Tufnell,
Actually, it's great talking to bands about Spinal Tap, because Priest holds Spinal Tap up as, like, the greatest movie of all time, and they can see all the elements in that film that are, you know, kind of relevant and representative.
Spinal Tap is the only movie that has ever told the truth about anything.
Wow.
Spinal Tap is one of the greatest music movies of all time.
Talking about Kiss again, I want to challenge some numbers here. I know you guys reprinted Gene's classic quote to have slept with 5,000 women. Now, here in Arts and Seizures, we are nothing if not astute mathematicians. So just to do the math, do we accept this? I mean, I think this is bullshit. This is kayfabe, as they call it in wrestling. If you were to sleep with 5,000 women or men or sheep or what have you, okay, that would be a new partner every night, 365 days a year, for 14 years continuously without a break.
Okay, but he had more than one partner a night.
And he also had more than 14 nights. Years to do this
well,
in,
I was trying
right?
for that, but it seems like a lot. Even if you do or take a break, it seems like not a possible feat.
Well, I mean, do you consider blowjob sex? So maybe that makes it easier? He could just be sitting there putting on his makeup.
We're getting into the Bill Clinton argument here.
Not a question for me.
I did not have sex with that woman. Sexual intercourse. No, well, you know, the question is, these guys, if it's their goal to, like, get laid, which is what, you know, Lemmy Kilmister says, I entered Motorhead, I made a band because I wanted pussy.
And because he wasn't attractive enough to get it otherwise.
Right, and still is. Well, you know, it's Lemmy's Lemmy. But I mean, you know, if these guys are on the road, like Al Jurgensen recently told an interviewer from Ministry, he said, I've slept with 1,000 women. Okay, I can't rival Gene Simmons. Right. Well, he's also married now, and he was married then too. But
a different wife, perhaps.
Yeah. No, a different wife. But that's the thing. He said, you know, I was on the road for 30 years. If you do the math, that's not that many chicks a night. So if that's your objective, if that's your objective, and you have the power to do it, because, you know, there are women lined up at your
the power,
at your dressing room.
Sex and drugs are great motivators.
Right.
So
now, if you're a rock writer, you're probably not going to sleep with 5,000 women.
What's your number, John?
Let's ask the next question here.
So who of all the many people that you interviewed in this book, and it's amazing, who, you know, sat with you and talked to you, all the members of Black Sabbath and Kiss, but like everybody through the 80s and the hair bands and up to, we'll talk about all the crazy subgenres of heavy metal too, who gets it? Who really has some self-awareness and isn't like, you know, a character of Spinal Tap, which is a character of themselves?
That's a great question.
Kingpin of metal?
We haven't been asked that, actually.
Well, we kind of have. I mean,
well, then you answer. I was just going to say, in case you didn't get to that part, the mentors are mentioned several times. We have El Duce in there, so I figure, you know, instant credibility.
Oh, well, I say if you're going to call yourself the metal god, then you deserve credibility as being, you know, especially, yeah, Rob Halford was in a band that was pretty much the second pioneering metal band and stayed true to metal all the way through its, you know, peaks and valleys. So I would say Halford is the ultimate metal hero.
I think in terms of self-awareness and being able to make fun of yourself and seeing all that, someone more like a Lemmy. You know, Rob's he's a fairly serious guy because he takes his mantle of the metal god very seriously. So he's not one to poke fun at metal, put it that way.
And I wonder with Rob and Judas Priest fans, how did they not twig that this guy was gay? For a very macho, testosterone-driven, and frankly homophobic audience.
Right.
How did they not twig that? I think he was gay.
Yeah.
The second I stood, I didn't even
think about it. It didn't enter my mind.
They were the first band that blew my mind, and it wouldn't have mattered.
As long as that's all they blew.
But yeah. Oh. But at the time, I didn't know what being gay was. I mean, I was, you know,
yeah, I think
fucking
but he's the good gay, not like the 80s hair bands who look like, you know, women.
Not
like
Flock of Seagulls or Poison gay?
Well, right. No, not Cinderella gay, which is like this fake gay.
But they weren't even gay. They just, like, are gay. I mean, like, all those hair bands are so...
But also, I mean, you know, I from New York, and when I see something like that, I connect it to imagery that I've already been surrounded by my whole life, you know, West Village Loud Boys.
Right.
And, you know, that's another thing, too, is like heavy metal is not a New York City thing. It's a Long Island thing. It's a New Jersey thing. It's a California thing.
It's a suburban thing.
It comes
thing.
Out of suburbia. Punk yes. rock comes out of cities.
But yeah. this came out of England. This was Birmingham, which brought us the two biggest metal bands.
True that. Hippies, that yeah. they were.
At the time, yeah. And Priest started out as hippies, too. I mean, if you look at them in the 70s, they were wearing bell bottoms and high-heeled shoes that they got from their girlfriend. Well, not Rob. He got his clothes from elsewhere.
He had a sister.
But,
so
but actually, he was the one who went into S&M shops and said, well, we need a change of image for this band. Let's put on the black leather and bring out the whips. And at that point, you could have, you know, if you had a brain, put two and two together and said, this is a very gay man.
Well, it's
but
like
no one did. And the label prevented people from knowing, too. Management, you know, kind of endorsed him or represented him as the ultimate macho dude on a bike.
And well, remember, I think in the story he told you was, you know, when they were getting into their leather thing, he said the jacket was like his Audrey Hepburn little black dress.
Love that.
That's his leather jacket.
Yeah.
So, he's a fashionista.
Fantastic. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break, a quick break, and we're going to get back. We're going to talk about Lemmy and hair metal and all sorts of other things. It's Arts and Seizures. We got some going back. Joe, why don't you spin some Blue Cheer?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting over here on the parchment farm. I've been sitting over here on the parchment farm. I've been sitting over here on the parchment farm. Ain't ever done nobody no wrong, no. But Lord, I think I'll be here for the rest of my life.
All right, we're back here at Heritage Radio, streaming live from Roberto's in the heavy metal section of Brooklyn, Bushwick, with the heavy metal kids, John Wiederhorn and Catherine Turman, authors of the awesomely heavy new book, Louder Than Hell, The Definitive Oral History of Metal. I'm having a blast. This is the best half hour of all time.
Thank you. Mine too. drinks, pizza, you, metal, doesn't get better.
and pizza. You know, that's what punk rockers and heavy metal heads have,
great pizza.
Have in common.
Great beer.
Pizza is what fuels this whole thing. Actually, Joe the engineer, I think Joe had a question he wanted to ask you guys. You
there, Joe? I think Joe's chewing.
I am chewing.
Totally. This is awesome. So we'll talk. We'll
heavy metal
chew.
Pizza party. Rock and roll.
I know, exactly. This is how it would go down in a bar. So why is the only band that punk rockers and metalheads can both agree on Motorhead?
Because Motorhead were able to fuse elements of early punk and new wave of British heavy metal. And almost even before it was punk and before it was new wave or British heavy metal, they were just so on the cusp of just making loud and brutal and bluesy rock and roll. And Lemmy had this just, you know, give a fuck attitude. He didn't care about metal. He didn't care about
he cared about speed and chicks.
Rock. Yeah,
speed,
exactly.
Both the drug and the musical tempo.
And he looked like a punk rocker. So yeah, Motorhead are definitely that crossover band, that band that allowed the two genres to really, you know, kind of merge without a bottle in the head kind of bar fights.
You know, to me, there have only been two truly perfect songs in the history of rock and roll, and one is Ace of Spades. I mean, it's just a model of economy and efficiency, not a note wasted. And the other is Maybelline by Chuck Berry, which is the same, a crazy shaking beat. It hits the guitar solo. It's not a note wasted. It's not show-offy. It fulfills its own promise, and then it leaves you wanting more.
I know Lemmy would be honored to hear you
right.
say that.
Lemmy's
I'm
favorite
sure he
band
would,
is
yes,
Chuck Berry.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
I want to talk about Guns N' Roses for a second, because I was a fan when they came out with Appetite for Destruction. I like that record.
Wait a minute. You like Guns N' Roses, but not early Van Halen.
And I'm going to tell you why, okay? Because to me, when I heard Guns N' Roses, what I was hearing was a band that understood the implications of Aerosmith. I heard a band like...
I thought you were going to say Heroin.
Also. But I heard, like, you know, because Aerosmith sort of got short shrift at the time. They were sort of fading away. Of course, they, you know, had a big resurgence. But I heard in Guns N' Roses, Aerosmith and blues and, like, the Stones and the things that Aerosmith were into. And all, especially all the hair bands at the time, for all that talk about glamour, I mean, how many of them were actually sitting around listening to the New York Dolls?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the dirtiness of Guns N' Roses. I'm an L.A. native. I saw them before they were signed. And they were just, they lived it, you know, like they sang it. I mean, they were fucking crashing on people's sofas, doing drugs, sleeping with sluts. You know, it was real.
Yeah, it felt real when they came out. It did not feel like they were made for MTV at all. And I thought the record was very convincing.
I agree. I mean, I think it still stands up. I mean, it's. I remember I did an interview with them back then, and then the label at Geffen, they're like, yeah, we have high hopes for this. We think it might sell like 50,000 copies. And now I don't even know, you know, 14 million or whatever million. It's at. Yeah.
So who's the next Guns N' Roses?
Is
it even possible anymore? It seems to me willful debauchery has gone out of style.
Well, I mean...
Actually... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I bet you're going to say Asking Alexandra or...
Well, right, because there's a lot of bands that are now hearkening back to that willful debauchery, you know, 80s hair metal thing, and that's what their, you know, blueprint is, really. You have Asking Alexandria, who have yet to really make that massive, massive sales album, arguing that, you know... albums can even sell anymore, but you look at their YouTube numbers and they're astronomical. You know, they have like 5 million hits on a video. But then the closest you get is Avenged Sevenfold, who were very tapped into that 80s hair metal sound, you know, in addition to a very, very blatant Metallica Jones. And they're huge. I mean, they probably are the biggest metal band right now.
Aside from Metallica,
the biggest new metal
is incredible thing.
New metal, N-E-W, not N-U, which is also in the book. To many people are like,
well,
what?
Okay,
here's another question.
Some of the crazy.
You do it all for the nookie, you know it.
Joe, you got another question?
I have another question because. So here's. I'm just going to lay this one out.
Oh dear.
Did Nirvana kill metal?
Ah. Well, we have a big story about that. Originally in our book. It's over 700 pages now. We had a grunge chapter, basically. We had Nirvana, Pearl Jam, but we also had the Melvins and Soundgarden and, of course, Alice in Chains. And
Mudhoney.
Obviously, Sabbath was a huge influence especially...
On all of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean...
Mudhoney?
Yeah, exactly.
Grungy, druggy.
And Van Halen was a huge influence on Alice in Chains, for better or worse. But ultimately, when it came time to make the book a manageable size, which... you will argue it is not, we cut the entire grunge chapter because, you know, some people said, yes, grunge killed metal. No, it killed the bad elements of metal, the over-the-top fifth-generation subpar crap metal.
Bad metal killed bad metal. Basically, you had...
And Nirvana made it look like, you know... Like
right. Well, you had
buried
hair bands taking it to the utmost extreme because record labels kept saying, okay, let's make it more commercial, let's make it more palatable. The same thing happened with thrash metal. Thrash metal started out as a very pure... and a very, you know, sincere and heavy, heavy kind of music until the labels step in and say, well, how can we sell millions more than Metallica sell? And then bands just get watered down. It's just the natural evolution of any major genre, at which point the heaviest thing in existence was sort of grunge and some of the stuff coming out
of... Yeah, oddly heavy rises to the surface. I will also say that a big part of it, which doesn't seem to be a factor now, MTV. MTV turned its back on the hair metal, the Headbangers Ball, right. And embraced Smells Like Teen Spirit and that of the time before YouTube was a huge thing.
It was kind of like first wave punk rock, too, when it came along. It's kind of people said, holy shit. I mean, then maybe... might have been REO, Speedwagon, and Stadium Bands and Arena Bands, or, you know, and Yes, and Elton John, and just the, you know, the bombastic kind of...
Boston.
I mean, hey, corporate rock still sucks.
Yes, it does.
And the people who are making it do fear, you know, for the next punk rocker and the next three-minute guy who's actually earnest and can do it. And, of course, immediately the first thing they do is co-op. One thing I was thinking about when reading your book The obvious analog in terms of oral histories is Please Kill Me. But what I'm seeing, what I see of the punk rock movement, and here it is, punk versus metalheads, always, okay, pass the pizza, pass the beer, and pass Lemmy. Please Kill Me, I mean, the thing about punk rock is it stood up as an art movement, it stood up as a social movement, it stood up as a political movement. It was not just about the music, and in terms of the music especially, it wasn't so homogenized. I mean, punk, you know, could have been television, it could have been the Talking Heads, and of course it was the Sex Pistols, and then GBH, and the Exploited.
The Germs.
You know, and the Germs. There was a lot of different things. Within that, where in, I mean, what does metal speak to besides pussy?
Well, it is.
And Norse gods and Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes, well, I mean, it is that lifestyle, though it's not as exalted or, you know, artistically intellectual, I guess. That's a thing. It's a base, lowest common denominator sort of blue collar thing at its heart, though. You know, here we are, college-educated idiots who love it as much as the next GED failure out there. But John, you—I feel you were jumping in.
No. Well, but you know, I mean, Please Kill Me covers about a 10-year time period in which an awful lot of stuff happened, and there was an incredible scene, and it was very political, and it was very volatile and inflammatory. You know, metal has now been around for 40-plus years, and there have been so many evolutions and shifts within the movement. You do have very political metal bands. Rage Against the Machine are very political metal band. You know,
System of a Down, right. If you consider them metal, but they are few and far between compared to punk in terms.
No, but
of,
even Sabbath had political songs.
Well, so their first record's a highly anti-war record.
Yeah,
but again, they were hippies.
About Vietnam.
I mean, they're arguably still hippies at the time.
But metal covers everything. I mean, you know, it's all about extremism, though. That's at its core, I think.
And you can get your history from Iron Maiden. You know, Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
That's right.
You
could another
Wicker Man.
Another band I never
Samuel
dug.
Samuel
you know?
Taylor Coleridge.
I mean, they sound like a pop band to me. You know.
Maiden?
Yeah, and I know how carefully crafted those songs were for maximum radio acceptance. And
you're a harsh critic. You're a harsh critic.
No, those songs were long. Oh. They were expansive. They were
self-indulgent.
Yeah.
Mike, you and I have to sit down and listen to Phantom of the Opera.
Hell yeah.
That is a song.
Put on Power Slave. You know, listen to Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, which is like, what, like 200 minutes
run
long.
To the hills. Run for your life.
Well, that one's 4 minutes.
I dig the enthusiasm. Tell me about all the wonderful heavy metal subgenres, because the list is endless, and it's, you know, it's much longer than any list of sexual fetishes, for instance. It's incredible.
I don't know about that. But.
Well, that's what 40 years has allowed. I mean, in order for metal to continue, it's had to evolve and adapt and switch and change, and one thing's been a reaction to another. You have thrash metal, the heaviest thing you could possibly do. So then these guys are like, well, how can we play
isn't
the
grindcore
drums
heavier
faster?
Than thrash?
Exactly. How can we do the vocals even more horrific, and how can we, you know,
how can our logo be more unreadable?
Right. And how can we sing about even more violent subject matter? So you have death metal.
How can
and
we smell worse than Watain?
Death metal comes along, and after death metal, these guys in Sweden are looking at them like, these guys are wearing like sweatpants, and they're, you know, their production sounds too good. Let's produce stuff that sounds like it was recorded from the bottom of a well and play with like even less agility. And you have black metal, and you know, everything is an evolution or a reaction.
Unless you
kill,
unless your singer's killed
it.
By another singer, then there's no more evolution in that band.
Well, you just get another singer. I mean, you could
after
have
you
your
eat
singer,
after your first singer's
sure,
brains.
Sure, eat your singer's brains. Well, he's
I don't know if you've gotten to that
part
yet.
He's the one who blew his head off with a shotgun. That was, and his name was Dead. So the writing was on the wall.
Self-fulfilling prophecy,
as were
say.
His brains and blood.
Oh,
but
it's definitely a high risk profession, especially in the darker areas of the sport.
But you can mock black metal and say, oh, it's all a bunch of mass murders and church burners. But there are some amazing musicians within, you know, that sphere, and guys who aren't burning churches now and are just making really wild and inspirational music.
Well, there's no question that these cats can play. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of it is about flash on guitar, but honestly, I've never been interested in the, you know, the Eddie Van Halen or the Yngwie Malmsteen style of guitar playing. Just, I don't find it interesting.
It's
so
funny.
Far removed from the blues, and I find it so cold, and, you know, it's all about technique and doesn't come close to the stuff that really got me hotted up, you know, when I was a kid when I first heard rock and roll. I just sort of like, this isn't music, it's a science experiment.
I have to say, personally, I'm with you there, and in fact, much to our not disappointment, we couldn't get Yngwie for the book. We did not try hard. We said, hey, Would Yngwie like to do an interview for the book? No.
I'm guessing he doesn't get it. I'm guessing he's the guy that
the
does not get it.
The least self-aware musician that is not in the book of all time.
Hey, you know, as ever, it's been the fastest half hour on the internet. But before we go, I want to tell you what my favorite anecdote in the book was, is that when Angus Young, and I love AC/DC, probably the greatest band of all time, the greatest live show I've ever seen, all like 7 or 8 times I've seen them, just like absolutely, and I consider them a rock and roll band. You know, they're sure. a heavy rock yes. and roll band. If that touches metal, fine, but it's, you know, I know Keith Richards likes them for the same reason I do.
And they've made a great album like 12 times.
Yeah, and you know, Malcolm just drives that fucking thing, you know, like a beast. But I love the bit when he's trying to figure out what his stage gimmick is going to be, and you know, he finally lands on the schoolboy thing, and he considered wearing a gorilla suit. We love nothing more in Arts and Seizures than men in gorilla suits.
Yeah, I'll leave you two alone.
So, Catherine and John, Louder Than Hell, where do we find you guys on the internet? You guys doing any personal appearances on the radio? Where can we find you on
You're
Facebook
listening to it now? No, we have a Facebook page, a Twitter account, Louder Than Hell.
Tumblr account.
And we are, yes, we're hoping we'll be coming out in softcover next year, and so we will make any mistakes we've made, which, of course, I'm sure there were none in 700 and something pages. There cannot be one mistake.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is a fucking awesome book.
Thank you.
It's been a great half hour here at Arts and Seizures. Mike Edison, Judy McGuire is still out there chasing ghosts.
We'll be back next
week. Thanks to Joe the Engineer and the Heritage Radio Networks. Thanks to you for listening. See you next week.
Woohoo!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.